Hey, Ryan, since you're not going to the game, where are you planning on watching the Wildcats?
I'll be stuck at the office, but I wish I could be lounging at home in front of my TV.
Yeah, me too. I've been thinking about getting like a big comfy recliner from Sam Levitt's Furniture.
Ooh, stylish.
Sam Levitt's Furniture has specials on a wide selection of recliners, so you can watch the game in style. You can check out a bunch of options at their Tucson locations. I'm thinking of getting one with swivel action.
Ooh.
But I kind of like the one I saw with cup holders.
Well, while Justin makes up his mind about which recliner he likes best, let's talk some sports.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast, episode 66. We are here in McHale Center. I'm Justin Spears here with Bruce Pasco, Dominic Pachaco. Arizona just coming off a fresh victory over the Oregon State Beavers, 62-53. They bounced back from their loss against Colorado. And I guess I'll start with you, Bruce. Arizona, they scored only 21 points in the first half, their lowest total out of any games this season, and the lowest since against Oregon last year when they put up 18 points on the road.
Yeah.
A very sluggish first half, but then this, when the second half started, it just almost seemed like a rejuvenated team. Arizona was active on the defensive side of the ball. You started to see a lot of half-court traps. The first one that really got the party started was when Parker, Jackson Cartwright, and Trier, they double-teamed, I forgot who it was, but then it ended up being a loose ball.
Steven Thompson, right?
Yeah. And then Trier gets the ball and then dunks on his brother, Ethan Thompson, and gets a spot on the SportsCenter top 10 plays.
Thompson's had a rough night.
Very rough night.
Right.
So, Bruce, just your overall thoughts from Thursday night's game against Oregon State.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was a little bit of a carryover from the Colorado game, and they're out there a little tentative, and you know, nobody wants to make a mistake after that. But I think a lot of it was Oregon State playing that zone, and they had to sort of get used to it, and then, you know, try and crank it up a little bit defensively on the other end, which they did do a good job defensively. It was a weird game to watch, but you know, I think the thing was they at least played defense with the kind of defense that their coach would like them to play, that he feels that you know, could help them down the road if they can get better like that.
Dom, you were at, from somebody who was at the office watching the game. You listened to the broadcast. You saw all the different replays.
Right.
You saw much more detailed plays than we did. What did you see?
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting because after the game, Sean Miller praised their defensive effort. Right. And I thought the defense played pretty well, but I was curious to see how Miller was going to be post game, because we've seen games like this where Arizona hasn't played terrible, but you know, maybe on one side of the ball they don't shoot well, and you know, Sean kind of lays into him on that side of the ball post game. But he was pretty upbeat today, and that surprised me because I didn't think Arizona played a particularly good game.
Not at all.
They, like Bruce said, they did play well defensively. 12 turnovers they forced 20 points off those turnovers. So they got the job done, and the pressure was high. I don't know. Again, we can't speak to their effort level as much as Sean Miller can, but their defensive intensity, I guess I should call it, was a lot better than in weeks past. I mean, there were more traps, and they seemed a lot more active on defense. They weren't waiting for things to come to them. They were being the aggressors.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, he it's just like one extreme to the other. I mean, 5 days ago he said he can't get through to him, he can't make him play hard, and then tonight he said this is the best defensive effort they've had all year. So I don't know. And that's pretty extreme. However, like you said, they were better and they were more active, especially in the second half. And I think once they saw it got their offense going and getting them the dunks, that gets them even more fired up, and it kind of snowballs the other direction. So, you know, it was definitely an improvement, but you're right, a long way to go, maybe.
I have a couple things I want to ask you guys about.
Sure.
And I was thinking about this at halftime when Arizona was losing at home to Oregon State. That was a real thing that happened. I'm just looking at this now. I mean, Arizona led for 10 minutes in this game, less than 11 minutes, about 10:40. Against Oregon State at home. I know Oregon State's better. They've been playing tough the last couple weeks, but are our expectations for Arizona, I think in our minds they've changed a lot, but I mean, is this still – we talk about them as a Final Four team because that was preseason expectations. But halfway through the year, they're 3-1 in Pac-12 play now, kind of struggling through every game. I mean, if this is the kind of game they're going to play for the rest of Pac-12, you know, a 9-point effort against Oregon State, yeah. I mean, where's our expectation level for the Wildcats right now?
I still think Arizona's expectations are very high. And that's
– For themselves.
For themselves, I mean – For me personally, I think this is a Final Four bust team still.
Right.
And I'm speaking from an objective point of view.
Just because of the talent.
Just because you have a potential number one overall draft pick in DeAndre Ayton, which it's like beating a dead horse. I mean, we could continue to talk about him being the prized prospect of this draft class, mm-hmm. along with a guy like Marvin Bagley. And then you add in Alonzo Trier, who's been here for a few years. He's done it all. He's seen it all. He's played for Arizona when they were at their lowest moment. I mean, he played for Arizona when they got bounced in the first round of the tournament to Wichita State.
Yeah.
And then in the next year, it turns out to be a terrific year for him, albeit the 19-game suspension. And
He finished real strong.
Yeah, but he finished real strong. He did terrific in the Pac-12 tournament. Mm-hmm. I believe he won Most Outstanding Player
in the
Pac-12 tournament. Mm-hmm. Plus, you add in the Sweet 16 run that they had. So you have a veteran like that in Alonzo Trier. Then plus you have Raleigh Alkins, who put together a pretty solid NBA draft combine. A lot of people were looking at him at possibly being kind of like a diamond in the rough player just mm-hmm. because he was matching up against top NBA players and doing pretty well. You add in that mix plus the other freshmen, guys like Brandon Randolph, where they are 4-star guys, impactful guys. I just think that the expectations are still intact. However, I don't know if it's the egos or the chemistry mm-hmm. or something about this team that's just not flowing right. But again, Sean Miller made a great comparison to John Calipari's team a few years ago. They were a number 8 seed in the tournament, and yet they somehow still made the national championship because they went through the growing pains all year long, mm-hmm. losing. You know, there was always that thought that this is a championship caliber team. Why do they keep losing to teams like Vanderbilt?
Right. That was the year they met UConn in the – it was like 8-19
exactly,
or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So I think that's a great comparison because there's so much talent. However, they're going through growing pains still, and that Sean Miller definitely alluded to that.
That's true. I don't remember what the classes were on that team, but the one thing about this team is there are some young guys, but there's also a lot of veteran mm-hmm. leaders on this team, and you'd think by midseason now there wouldn't be quite this level of that, but they've still got a lot of time to get it together, and the Pac-12 is, you know, it's not as tough as we thought probably either, so, you know, heck, they're in first place, and you know they can probably win. You know, they might be able to win this conference with 4 or 5 losses the way it's going. Who knows?
That's what concerns me, and I'm glad you guys are still upbeat because I'm almost the exact opposite. I mean, if this Arizona team wins the Pac-12 with 4 or 5 losses in Pac-12 play, what does that mean for Arizona? I mean, this is a conference they should be steamrolling through. I mean, it's from top to bottom, it is the weakest the Pac-12's been in years.
And the second best team is 1-3 right now in conference play.
Right, and I mean we're talking up teams like Oregon State and Colorado, who are just not. I mean, Colorado was what, 9-6 when they beat Arizona. I mean, these teams just aren't that talented. When you look at when you compare them to a team like Arizona, at least, and we're sitting here asking, you know, can Arizona win with 4 or 5 losses? And it's just, that's what concerns me. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of time left, and it's early in the year. And like you said, alluded to Calipari, I think that's a great example. But we haven't really seen that from the Wildcats in the past. You know, when they struggle mid-season, that usually carries over into Pac-12 tournament play or, you know, into the tournament when they got bounced in the first round. So, I don't know. It's just eerily similar to recent years where they're struggling midway through the year. In the back of our minds, we're like, okay, well, they got time to turn it around, and they can get there, and maybe by tournament time, you know, if they're ready by March, that's all that matters.
Oh yeah,
I think we're saying it again, but are they going to be ready by March? Because they're playing against the Pac-12, and I mean, they're going to play one ranked team the rest of the year, and I don't know. I mean,
Will that team be ranked?
Yeah.
ASU
probably a little on their way down the rankings. But another thing that stood out to me tonight, and we talked about it a little bit before coming on the podcast, is bench points. Bench production, I mean, Sean Miller has talked about, you know, guys stepping up, and he's going to give minutes to the guys that are producing on the floor. Arizona, 5 bench points tonight, got outscored by an Oregon State team. Bench points, that is, 7-5. Bruce, I mean, what's the solution here?
That should not happen against Oregon State.
Right.
Because Oregon State basically has no bench. They have 1.5 guys on their bench, really. And, you know, Brandon Randolph had an off shooting night, and that was a big part of it. I mean, he even missed a dunk, I believe, at one point. It was interesting to hear because, I mean, I think Miller's kind of, I don't know which way he's going to go with this because he's saying we need everybody, everybody's got to get going. Blah, 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 and yet he didn't play 2 guys, didn't play Pinder or Barcelo at all tonight Thursday, and the guys he did play, 12 minutes apiece, basically 3 guys, so mm-hmm. basically went 8 deep. I'm not sure which way this is going to go, if this bench can develop more or not.
And Miller also said in this week's press conference on Monday, that it all starts with the starters. Alonzo Trier, Raleigh Alkins, DeAndre Ayton, Dusan Risic, and Parker Jackson Cartwright have to be the guys that get everything started. In the second half, the 3 big ones, Ayton, Alkins, and Trier, they all got the party started. Where was everybody else at? They were the ones that established it, and then all of a sudden, Miller turns around and says, we got to get better production from our bench. Mm-hmm. It just seems like there's too much contradicting, and I think Sean Miller's a great coach, but I just don't know if he's given us a good sense of where to put the blame.
And then maybe part of it is they still don't have clearly defined roles, especially on the bench. Obviously, the starters are defined, but who's 6, 7, 8, that does change a lot, and who's getting the minutes. I mean, maybe that gets a little more defined in the next month or so. And you know, guys, once they get those roles, especially off the bench, I think it's important when you're in midseason to start getting a role, and you know, okay, I'm coming in here, I'm going to play X amount of minutes, and here's what I'm going to do. You know, and I think there's still some uncertainty, and guys are still, you know, they're both kind of in some situations not wanting to make a mistake and maybe going to be a little tentative, but maybe on the other hand, trying a little too hard to make an impression. It just seems a little bit late to be getting that, but they have a little bit more room to work with it.
And the other thing that concerns me with this team, it's January. I mean, January 12th, and we're sitting here talking about rotation and, you know, effort level on defense. These aren't conversations you have about a quote-unquote Final Four team in January when they should be gearing up for a run in March. I mean, these are conversations you have in November and December, and I mean, before the season even starts. And I mean, we talked so much before the season about how this is the deepest Arizona team Sean Miller's ever had, and yet they're playing roughly 7-man rotations with the bench scoring 5 points. So the production's got to come from somewhere. It's got to happen soon, because I know we keep saying there's a lot of time, but it's going to get down to crunch time here pretty soon.
But also another thing, it's not just Arizona's problem. I mean, this is a problem that's been going on with a lot of elite programs across the country. Mm-hmm. Michigan State struggled last night, or a couple nights ago. Mm-hmm. I forgot who they were playing. Villanova has been struggling.
Right.
I've been seeing a lot of stuff on Twitter about Duke and how much, if this team really pulls it together, this team can very much be a championship caliber team.
Mm-hmm.
This is a problem that's been going on with a lot of programs across the country, which is fortunate for Arizona, but
that's the difference, is they've done that before.
Opportunity.
Exactly. They've done that before. Coach K has turned a team around, maybe not playing great in the middle of the season, and he's turned around and gone and won a championship. John Calipari has done the same thing that we just talked about. So again, I'm not trying to compare Miller to anyone, or I'm not really even diving into Miller, but I mean, it's, they got to start finding more production somewhere. The bench has got to step up. The starters, like we've said, Ayton's fine, Trier's fine, Parker's what he is, and Alkins, they're always going to be productive, but they need help somewhere else.
When you look at a guy like Brandon Randolph, his numbers speak for itself, 1-for-7
mm-hmm.
There was a lot of opportunities missed in the first half where he was put in immediately, and then he misses a couple easy buckets that he could have had. And then he redeems himself with a steal and dunk.
Right.
That was his only bucket of the game. But when he misses two easy shots like that and then he gets the dunk, Miller's already pulling him out and putting in Dylan Smith. So
that's what I'm saying.
Feel like he's getting trouble getting his bench right. going.
Well, that's what I'm saying about the – I think it helps when you have more defined roles and guys aren't looking to get – worried about getting yanked right away. There's a little more comfort zone. I mean, he's always – any coach would do that. If you really screw up, you're going to be out. But if you have a little more confidence and assurance knowing you've got – you're going to do this, you're going to do that, and how long you're going to be in the game, I think it makes you more comfortable. And it just seems to me that some of these guys aren't always that comfortable coming off the bench. I mean, Dylan Smith has been totally up and down. Sometimes games he's been really effective. Tonight he came in, you know, wasn't much of a factor and missed a couple shots against a zone when they really could have used that. So, you think there could be – there's a lot more potential to come out of this. And, we've just not seen it tonight.
The potential is ridiculous for this team. I mean, like you said, Justin, they have Final Four capabilities. I mean, they have it on their roster. It's just ridiculous. I mean, we talk about how young this team is, and we've said it on this podcast. You got – essentially, I mean, you got two seniors in Ristic and Jackson Cartwright in the starting lineup, and then you got a guy like Alonzo Trier, who's a bona fide veteran, and then you got guys like DeAndre Ayton and Dylan Smith and Brandon Randolph, and, you know, there's a lot of talent on this team, so there's definitely, you know, the ceiling is, I think, a hell of a lot higher than the floor is, but...
As Michael Jordan once said, the ceiling is the roof.
The ceiling is the roof of this Wildcats team.
All right, guys, well, just quickly, let's go ahead and kind of close things up here. Arizona plays Oregon at noon at McHale Center. Game will be on ESPN2.
Saturday.
Oregon on Saturday. They're coming off a pretty big win.
Oh, absolutely.
They just beat number 11. Arizona State in Tempe, 76-72, in kind of a grinded out game. James Harden was sitting courtside to watch ASU fall to the Ducks. Bruce, I don't know if you've seen Oregon too much this year. A very different team this time around. No Dylan Brooks, no Chris Boucher, no Jordan Bell. They don't have Casey Benson anymore. I mean, it's pretty much a brand new team, with the exception of Peyton Pritchard.
Yeah, pretty perimeter oriented. I mean, but the one thing about them is they, you know, Dana Altman always adjusts to his personnel, and usually right about this time of year they just start getting better, and that's the thing you got to worry about them if you're Arizona coming in here. But yeah, they got Pritchard back. I mean, it's amazing, really. I mean, literally, they have Pritchard and Roman Sorkin, who was like their ninth guy last year, are back. That's it. I mean, basically, and one other guy, I think. And, you know, they got a grad transfer. And they've got a five-star freshman in that Troy Brown on the wing. Mm-hmm. But, man, it's, you know, I'm not sure how they're doing it, but I do know they've gotten a lot out of that perimeter. And Pritchard's, a really effective leader and scoring point guard, and that's a great place to start. But,
it'll be interesting if this becomes a trend this year, when Arizona travels or when they have teams traveling here. The front end, whoever beats ASU, that's two upsets now in a row in the front end of series. I don't know if I'm making any sense here, but you guys know what I'm getting at.
No, Colorado did. They beat.
Well, yeah, Colorado beat ASU, and then came and beat Arizona. Oregon beat ASU. They're obviously hot. They just beat, in their minds, number 11 on their court. Why not come in and beat number 17 on their court? So it'd be interesting if that's a thing throughout the year, if ASU keeps struggling, but something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, confidence. I mean, they come in with that confidence. It can go either way on you if you worry about it, if you get up, you know, basking it too much. I was wondering if Colorado being as young, if they would do that, but they, you know, for them it was just a confidence builder, and maybe for Oregon, especially being the young, new team they are, maybe that pushes them over the edge, so they could be really dangerous coming in here.
What I think you got to keep an eye on is Arizona's offense. I mean, and I know that's counterintuitive to what we've been saying, and especially what I've been saying the last few podcasts in recent weeks. But when the Wildcats' offense is on, they're going to win games. I mean, even if defense struggles a little bit. But, I mean, the Wildcats struggled against the zone tonight and were getting beat because of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Oregon State shot 39% and still almost beat them. So I think if Arizona's offense comes out and is hot, they'll be fine. Like Bruce covered, Oregon's a completely new team. I don't know how. I mean, they're obviously not as, they don't have as much firepower on offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not going to score in bunches. So, but it'll be a good little test for Arizona. I mean, they just beat ASU in Tempe, so it's not going to be a cakewalk, I don't think. Yeah. But
it's interesting what you say, Dom, because the whole thing with Sean Miller is defense, defense, defense is going to keep you out of trouble. But I think this is an interesting team where the defense isn't that good and the offense is really good. So, yeah, really, you can make a case for that. It carries you, you know, in a lot of cases. But he always prefers that defense as a sort of a safeguard to know you're going to get that game in and game out. Because I think you're right. I think this the offense, is such that I don't think you're gonna. This is probably a floor kind of effort for the offense tonight, playing shooting 42% against a weird, you know, a tough zone defense.
Right.
It's just not. I don't think they can do a whole lot worse than that if they're fully healthy. You know,
shoot 42% and win by 9. That's not a bad deal.
Yeah.
All things considered.
Yeah, it's just they got to be. I mean, I was, you know. I mean, it's going to be tough to play them up there. I'll say that.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, they'll probably be it's probably good in the sense that they'll remember this game and be ready. But you know, they were lucky they were playing this game here.
The last time Oregon came down to Tucson was in 2016. It was Alonzo Trier's freshman year. Raleigh Alkins was a recruit on his visit, and that's when the Ducks snapped Arizona's 49 home game winning streak, which I thought was very impressive. I never thought I'd see the day where Arizona would lose at home.
Oh, Tucson,
in my career, because it was when we were in college. It was, it was when we were going to U of A, and I never thought I'd ever see the day where Arizona would lose a basketball game at home. And then sure enough, it happened. Raleigh Alkins actually touched on it in the press conference. Let's go ahead and hear what he had to say about that.
I think it was my first time coming to Arizona. When Arizona lost, it felt like the world ended. So, you know, that's something that was great to see that caught my attention in terms of coming to the school. When we lose here, it's like the world is over. So it was bad. It was good to see, but also bad to see because they lost. But at the same time, I think that, you know, hopefully this time around, we get to change that.
It's funny because I remember him taking that visit, and I remember thinking and hearing that everybody thought, they're not going to get him. He just came and watched them lose. Why would he come to Arizona? But you know, he seemed to like it, and he didn't. You know, I think that is true. I mean, I remember him telling me before. He said they were even crying in the locker room after that game. Mm-hmm. So,
wow,
it was something else.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can tell from Raleigh. I mean, I remember that after that game. I mean, just walking out of McHale Center, it was like
morning.
Yeah, I mean, it was like the season was over. I mean, it was insane. Like, people couldn't wrap their heads around what just happened. I mean, that's how rare it is for Arizona to lose in the stadium. But I don't know. I mean, it like we've said, it'll be an interesting game. Oregon's hot coming off. I mean, they have a ton of confidence coming off a win at number 11 ASU. So Arizona's going to get everything they have.
Mm-hmm. And you can catch that game on ESPN2. The Wildcats will take on the Ducks at noon. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at The Wildcaster, and don't forget to download that free Wildcaster app. We got podcast videos, all articles that you need for Arizona basketball. For Bruce, Dom, I'm Justin. We'll see you next time.